him in prison, and this is what we need to understand.
So true.
David Brock and some of these organizations have already raised tens of millions of dollars for an impeachment process. Then they want jail to the chief. They need to understand that this is a war. We are so far beyond normal politics, Sean. We are in a very dangerous moment. And while President Trump is a very strong leader and a man of strong constitution, he was able to survive all of this during the campaign and get elected president. When you're president and you are faced with the kind of monolithic opposition you were talking about, plus a federal bureaucracy that is completely out to undermine him every day, the intelligence community that is engaged in some of this as well that we have heard, I hope to God that he is strong enough to withstand this. They are out to destroy him because if he succeeds, the country changes for the good, and they must not allow that to happen.
Hey guys, I'm Monica Crowley, and this is the Monica Crowley Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me as we begin to close out yet another week. This is your go-to for hot liberty, a safe space for all of us thought criminals, independent thinkers, and happy warriors. On social media, Instagram, I'm at Monica Crowley _. And on Twitter and True Social, I'm at Monica Crowley. Also, I can be reached by email at MonicaCrowleyPodcast@gmail.com. All right, we've got a lot of really big shows coming up. Next week, we're going to be joined by former British Prime Minister Liz Truss. Liz Truss was targeted by the deep state, the globalist deep state. Remember now that every Western country, not just ours, every Western country has a deep state, and they are all tied to the globalist deep state. Liz Truss was a populist along the lines of a Donald Trump, not quite so flamboyant as Trump or Boris Johnson, but she was a populist, she was a conservative, she was all for Brexit, and so therefore she needed to be destroyed. She had a very, very short tenure at 10 Downing Street. She's written a new book, and she is going to join us here next week. That is going to be a huge show. Because again, you need to understand that what we're going through here in America is a Marxist revolution. It is a CCP revolution. It is a globalist revolution. And it's not just here. This is happening across the West. Liz Truss was a casualty of this, as was Donald Trump. He has come back. Maybe she's going to come back. We will ask her that question and so much more next week. So not to be missed. Also, we're working on some other really big things on this show, so you don't want to miss a second of it. Make sure you tell all of your friends and family, colleagues, people you meet on the bus about the Monica Crowley Podcast so that everybody is getting educated, enlightened, entertained. Nobody wants to have FOMO, fear of missing out, of the Monica Crowley Podcast. All right, first up today, the Monica Memo. Kangaroo courts, Harlem, and Democrats in a sweaty panic. We all know that President Trump is currently in Lower Manhattan, having to endure this first criminal trial. And of course, there are three others, Jack Smith's out of the DOJ and the Georgia case. They are all kangaroo courts. This is corruption to the nth degree. And the current one about the Stormy Daniels hush money thing, these are not crimes. Donald Trump did nothing wrong. So as you see him in court, they're doing jury selection. They expect that to be wrapped up pretty soon. As of right now, we know of seven jurors who have been impaneled. And with the exception of, I think, one, the rest of them get their news from the New York Times, NPR, Google, TikTok. Okay, so we're talking about real brain surgeons here. We're also talking about very far-left Marxist New York City residents. So can he get a fair trial? Of course not. Is he going to be convicted in this? Probably. Probably. I mean, he didn't commit a crime, but communists don't care. Again, we've done entire shows about how communists do whatever they want because the rules do not apply. So they make up the crimes. And then they make up the evidence around it. It's all fraudulent. And then they rush it through a system and they bring it to court in an area where they know they are heavily, heavily favored. In New York City, about 85 to 90% of the population voted for Joe Biden. Okay. So this is your jury pool. Everybody knows this is kangaroo court. Everybody knows this is a total farce, including the criminals prosecuting him and the leftist hyenas in the press. Everybody knows this. If you turn on MSNBC and you see Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes and Nicole Wallace, and they're also earnestly saying, oh my goodness, he broke the law and he's finally facing justice. These people know he did not break any laws. All of these hyenas know this is all a fraud. And they do not care that these frauds are tearing apart our system. In fact, they are cheerleading the tearing down of the system, because this is what communists do. So everybody knows this, and we're going through the motions. You know, it's like the old Soviet saying, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. So you bring me a political enemy, and I will make up a crime and make up evidence to go with that crime, convict that person, and put them away forever. This is where we are in the society right now, guys. You're in a tyranny, in case you didn't know it. This is so far past a republic. This is so far past even corruption. Yes, it's corrupt, but it's so much bigger than that. We are in a tyranny right now. So I've seen a couple of people on social media suggest, or which is a really good idea. Now, look, this corrupt judge, and we dealt with him on Tuesday's show. If you haven't heard that show, go back and listen to it. This corrupt judge, Juan Marchand, with his corrupt daughter, who has raised about $100 million for Adam Schiff. She's still working for the Biden-Harris campaign. I mean, the conflicts are out the wazoo. And yet he's still on the bench doing this case, not forced to recuse. So again, the farce goes on. But this judge also made a very sort of under the radar decision, which was not really noticed by anybody except for Mark Levin. I saw him talking about that on Twitter. So Levin pointed out that this judge, you know, usually in court, they take Fridays off for administrative work, whatever, but the jury is not required to be there and they're not in session. This judge has decided to make Wednesday the day off smack in the middle of the week, because he is trying to do two things with that decision. One, he's trying to keep Trump in New York City. Because if they took Fridays off, he could leave on Thursday and start flying around the country on the weekends campaigning. So this corrupt judge wants to keep him like tied to New York City, because otherwise he'd have to leave on a Tuesday night, go and do an event Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening, and then Wednesday evening come back to New York City to be back in court on Thursday morning. So this is a very disruptive schedule. And he did that on purpose. The other thing that Mark Levin pointed out is that Friday is the Sabbath. So there are no Orthodox Jews, apparently, in this jury pool, because they can't serve on a jury on a Friday. So by holding court on Friday, Orthodox Jews that are likely to be far more favorable to Donald Trump than the rest of New York City, this judge is excluding that entire block of people, Orthodox Jews, because they can't go anywhere. It's the Sabbath. So do you see the way the communists move? They move in the big picture and they move in the details like this. Nobody's really paying attention to it. Kudos to Levin for picking up on it. That is a major, major problem. And so the corruption for the communists and the lust for power for the communists exhibits itself in big ways, like the fundamental transformation of the nation and the destruction of the Constitution, and small ways in order to get there, like holding court on Friday so a more favorable jury pool of people cannot serve. That is what's going on. All right, so I saw a couple of people on social media suggest, and I think these are great ideas, that while Donald Trump is chained to New York City, he should hold rallies while he's here. So he gets out of court at like 4 p.m, then go hold a rally. Go hold a rally in every borough of New York City, and there are 5 of them. Just go hold rallies. Madison Square Garden, the Beacon Theater. Go and get these venues. Now, maybe Madison Square Garden would accommodate him if he wanted to rent it out and hold a huge rally there. The Beacon Theater on the Upper West Side, probably not. They'd probably turn him down, and then guess what? Then you've got a story. The Beacon Theater turning him down. But I love this idea of like going around New York City, because if he's stuck here for, 4 to 8 weeks, why not maximize his time? If he can't leave New York while he's in the Star Chamber, well, then he should make it work for him. I love that idea. And you know what? He should go right into the Queens District of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right there. Go do a rally or do an event, like a Puerto Rican-based event with Ruben Diaz Sr., who's a Democrat, who's like one of the last remaining moderate ones, and write in AOC's district right up her butt. I love that idea. Let's do it. Also, there is a Democrat representative in New York City named Richie Torres, who is phenomenal on the state of Israel. So he's surrounded by communists, but he is not one. And he is a diehard supporter of Israel and the Jewish people. I think he should go with Richie Torres into his district and hold some kind of event for Israel and the Jewish people. Do it. Do it. If you're going to be chained here by the Marxists, well, then leverage it to your advantage. One of the things that Trump did do this week is after court, he went up to Harlem. And this is one of those kinds of seminal events. Guys, we've had a number of seminal events so far in this campaign that I think are like real turning points. They're not getting a lot of press coverage because the imperial media won't do it. But there are two things just over the last week. One, this corrupt Judge Mershon in Manhattan basically telling Trump he cannot take a single day off from this trial or he will face jail time. And that includes being barred from attending his son Barron's high school graduation. Now, I think even people who don't like Donald Trump take a look at that and go, whoa, that is a step too far. You're going to deny the guy a chance to go to a once-in-a-lifetime event for his son, his high school graduation? That's really bad. And of course, the imperial media is brushing it under the rug or they're laughing at it. But I'm telling you, that is one of those seemingly smallish things that loom huge. People understand that. How would you like to not do anything wrong, be railroaded by your political enemies, facing actual jail time and being denied by the judge one day off from this Star Chamber kangaroo court to go to your child's high school graduation? Most people understand that. Most people feel very emotional about it, and they feel for Trump. I'm telling you, the left is underestimating the backlash to their crimes and to their massive pile-on on Donald Trump. They are really underestimating it. So that is one thing that happened over the last couple of days that is going to have an outsized backlash effect. The other is this trip that Donald Trump took up to Harlem in Northwest Manhattan, where he visited a bodega. A bodega in New York City is like a small shop where you can get anything from a bottle of water to a pack of cigarettes to a magazine. It's like a stop and go kind of like quick, just what you need. You need a razor. You need some toothpaste. You run into the bodega and you buy what you need. But this wasn't just any bodega. This was the Manhattan bodega where the clerk named Jose Alba famously defended himself against an ex-con. And that this was an incident that drew nationwide attention. Okay. This happened back on July 1st, 2022, where Mr. Alba found himself in a life-threatening situation. It was caught on camera, and we saw the footage, went everywhere. He was working behind the counter when he was attacked by a 35-year-old man named Austin Simon and his girlfriend, Tina Lee. So while he's being attacked, Alba thought quick, and he defended himself by grabbing a knife and fatally stabbing the guy, Simon. Alba has always said that his actions were in self-defense, and if you see the videotape, you see that it was in self-defense. That is clear. But instead of like turning her attention to the girlfriend there and then the dead criminal, well, the Manhattan DA, who is a Soros DA, Alvin Bragg, yes, the same Alvin Bragg who is prosecuting Donald Trump on these bogus charges, he pressed charges against Mr. Alba despite his claim of self-defense and being obviously on camera trying to defend himself. It created this massive public outcry when Bragg did it, leading to widespread support for Mr. Alba, including from the mayor, Eric Adams, who probably just said it because he had to say it. But it pointed to a much bigger problem here, which is what communists always turn things upside down, right? Everything goes into inverse. This is why we are down the Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole here in this country. Criminals and illegal aliens get away with murder, but citizens go to jail when they are defending themselves. Completely upside down. So Trump wanted to highlight this communist injustice and also highlight crime as well. So he went to the Sana convenience store, the bodega in Harlem, and he held a meeting there with the co-owner, a man named Ahmad Ahmed, and small business advocate Francisco Marte, who I was on Newsmax with last night. I met Mr. Marte, and he is lovely and a small business champion. During that visit, Trump came out. He expressed his support for allowing bodega workers to carry firearms for self-defense. And Mr. Ahmed, one of the co-owners, said, yeah, you know, I would love the idea that I could have a gun to defend myself against rising crime in my area. But Mr. Alba's attorney, Rich Cardinale, cautioned, and this is a blue state, blue city issue, cautioned that the use of a firearm could lead to legal consequences for somebody who pulls a gun in self-defense, similar to what Mr. Alba experienced after that 2022 incident. So you can't really defend yourselves in blue cities and blue states. The burden is on you if you are being the victim of a crime. Again, it is completely upside down. It's a complete inversion, but this is what communists do, guys. Okay, so understand what the dynamic is. It isn't, I mean, it's crazy, but there is a method to their madness. It's all about power and control by turning things upside down and destabilizing the society. Okay, there are several reasons why I think that this visit to that Harlem bodega was so important, and it's one of those fulcrum moments in this campaign. Just like the judge denying Trump attending Barron's high school graduation. Okay, this is one of those fulcrum moments. Of course, Trump drew attention to out-of-control crime in New York City, as well as the tsunami of illegal aliens crushing the city. Those are the top two issues for New York voters, as well as the economy and inflation. So it's really the cost of living crisis and the quality of life crisis. Both suck right now, thanks to Biden and the communists who run New York City. Voters in New York are pissed, and they want to change. Enter Donald Trump. So while he was at the bodega, Trump was surrounded by thousands of people who organically came out, just like his visit at Chick-fil-A in Atlanta, where the crowd was in there buying food, and all of a sudden Donald Trump walks in and he had this organic outpouring of support. Same thing happened in Harlem. When word got out, suddenly there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people lining the streets chanting Trump and 4 more years. So in the midst of all of this, being surrounded by tremendous support, here's Donald Trump talking to the crowd, telling them that the Soros DA, Alvin Bragg, is after him, but he is doing nothing to clean up the streets of violent criminals. Listen.
Alvin Bragg does nothing. He goes after guys like Trump, who did nothing wrong. Violent criminals, murderers, they know there are hundreds of murderers all over the city. They know who they are. They don't pick them up. They go after Trump.
And here is Trump again talking to the crowd saying, man, what's happening to me is totally unfair. And the entire world is watching this farce, this absolute corrupt Marxist farce in New York City and this legal system that is completely out of control. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to beat this back and we're going to save America.
The whole world is watching this New York legal system. This is all election interference at the highest level. It all comes out of Washington because they're losing badly. You know they're losing very badly. You do know that. They're losing badly in the polls. And I think you're going to see some numbers coming out now, even higher. People don't like the persecution. They don't like what's going on. They don't like these fake prosecutors. Deranged Jack Smith, the whole group of them. And I think you're going to see some big changes being made.
Okay, and then, you know, he was greeted by these chants and people, including kids, saying, "We love you, Mr. Trump," just like that Atlanta Chick-fil-A. Okay, so there is something much bigger going on here I want to get to. But New York City voters, like voters in most cities and most blue states around the country, as well as, of course, red state voters, is the cost of living crisis and the quality of life. Those are the top line reasons that Trump's visit to Harlem was so important. Okay, now here are a few less obvious reasons why his visit was a fulcrum moment. Reasons that have the left breaking out in a rash. Poll after poll now shows that Donald Trump is closing in on Biden with young voters. So while Biden is marginally ahead of Trump in younger voters, Trump is narrowing that gap to about 4 points, and the momentum is with Trump. Their number one issue is the economy and inflation. They can't find great jobs. They're struggling to make ends meet. They can't afford a Happy Meal at McDonald's, and they are pissed. Now, the other reason that young people are falling away from the Democratic Party is because of Israel and Hamas and that war. This is not a good thing. They tend to be increasingly anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian Authority, pro-Hamas, if you will. So they are backing away from Biden and the Democrats for that reason. That doesn't necessarily mean that they will vote for Trump, a lot of these people, but they may stay home. And that applies not just to young people, but it also applies to other core Democrat constituencies that we're going to get to here in a second. But younger adults are showing the lowest Democrat support since 2005. This is according to the Gallup poll. 2005. So they're falling away from the Democrats in like record numbers. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to proactively vote for Trump. But if they stay home and don't show up, well, then that means curtains for the Democrat Party. In addition to the younger voters, Gallup also shows that the Democrat advantage is at record lows among Black and Hispanic adults as well. So while Joe Biden and the Democrats still have a clear advantage over Trump and the GOP, that spread is at its lowest level going back to 1999, according to Gallup. And the decline in Democrat support among Blacks and Latinos is matched by an increase in Republican affiliation. It says, according to Gallup, that the Democrats' 12-point advantage among Latinos in 2023 represents a new low in trends dating back to 2011. So Black and Latino support for Biden and the Democrats falling apart. All of this dovetails with a whole series of other recent polls showing that, again, it's not just young people fleeing the Democrat Party. all of their core constituencies are leaving them in droves. They are particularly panicked about Black and Latino voters, which is why Trump's visit to the Harlem Bodega in the heart of the Black and Latino community in New York City was critical, and why that visit sent the left into total meltdown. The Blacks and Latinos in the neighborhood could not believe their eyes when Donald Trump stepped out of the car. They had heard rumors that he was coming, and that's why you had thousands of people lining the streets. They were waiting for a celebrity. They had heard it was going to be Donald Trump, and they came out. They could not believe their eyes. No Republican has ever come there, ever. And he looked them in the eye. He shook their hands. He talked to them, and most importantly, he listened to them, and he told them that he will deliver for them, make them more prosperous by making the economy strong and robust, and make their community safer by supporting the police and creating law and order and shutting the border. And for these people who came out and saw him at the Chick-fil-A in Atlanta or saw him outside the bodega in Harlem, for them, it's not just a promise like they hear from every other politician. They know that Donald Trump did it once before, so they know his word is good. Trump was greeted by chants of four more years in Harlem. Harlem. This is why his trip to that bodega was so pivotal, even though the imperial media is doing its best to bury it. That tells you that it's pivotal because they are burying it, and it sent the left into a panic spiral, as it should. They are terrified that Blacks and Latinos are moving away from them in droves. It is sending them into a panic that younger voters are leaving them in droves, which is why Joe Biden keeps giving away the store to cancel out all these student loan debts. You know how much this is going to cost us? $559 billion for Biden to go try to win back younger people's votes. His administration is dead set on defying the Supreme Court, which made it illegal for him to do it, but he doesn't care because, again, communists do whatever the hell they want, defying Congress, which has also blocked him from doing this, and, of course, saddling America with even more debt, to the tune of probably upwards of $600 billion for Joe Biden. So you're paying, and you just paid your taxes, you're paying for Joe Biden to take that money and transfer it to people going to Harvard Law School on the backs of plumbers who didn't go to college, but now have to pay more in taxes and work a little bit harder to pay for that Yale Law School degree, so that Joe Biden can buy their votes in order to get reelected. This is another reason, guys, because they are so panicked that they're losing their traditional voting base. This is why, one of the big reasons why, they are flooding the country with illegal aliens who are now apparently being given instructions on how to vote. Listen to this story. Now, there are conflicting reports about this, okay? So take it with a grain of salt, but I want to report it. Apparently, there were flyers being placed in a Mexican shelter close to the border for illegal immigrants who are getting ready to cross that border, telling them that they should vote for Joe Biden. The flyers read, quote, "Reminder to vote for President Biden when you are in the United States. We need another 4 years of his term to stay open." This flyer apparently came from a group, an NGO, a non-governmental organization called Resource Center Matamoros, or RCM, and it did have the RCM logo, but then RCM claimed that it did not create these flyers and says they have no idea where they came from, but have they removed them? If they say that they're fake, we don't know. But it points to a much, much bigger issue. The DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was impeached by the House of Representatives for maintaining the wide open border and blowing off Congress's requests for documents, testimony, etc., and for lying to Congress as well. He was impeached for that. Those articles of impeachment were sent to the Senate per the Constitution for a trial, and Chuck Schumer and every single Democrat voted just to toss the articles of impeachment right out. So Chuck Schumer and the Democrats continue to light the Constitution on fire in service of lighting the Constitution on fire. Communists do whatever the hell they want, and Chuck Schumer and the Democrats just threw out well over 200 years of the Constitution and the processes enshrined in the Constitution and the rule of law just because they didn't want to hold the trial. They didn't want the American people to see the reams of evidence of Mayorkas's crimes and the crimes associated with his and Biden's wide-open border. So instead of doing their constitutional duty of taking the articles from the House, holding the trial as they are constitutionally obligated to do, Schumer and the Democrats just threw it out and said, next. You see what's going on here, right? This is, in every direction, the intentional destruction of the country. Congressman Dan Bishop was part of a hearing with Mayorkas yesterday in the House, and he questioned Mayorkas on what he and DHS are doing to stop illegal aliens from voting. Of course, the entire point of the wide open border is to flood the country with illegals to get them voting, to get a permanent Democrat voting majority. So, of course, that is the point. And so, therefore, Mayorkas and the Democrats want millions of illegals voting. So you know that you're going to get lies from Mayorkas, but I thought this exchange was really important.
What actions is the Department of Homeland Security taking to ensure that, especially given the millions of illegal entries, including 2 million gotaways, that non-citizens are being prevented from registering and voting unlawfully?
Congressman, individuals who are not citizens of the United States cannot vote in federal elections.
But that's not what I asked. I asked what actions DHS is taking to ensure that that doesn't occur.
Well, two things. Number one, I believe that it is state and local election officials that monitor the eligibility of individuals. We do not oversee the election enrollment process. What we do is enforce our borders.
So Mayorkas is out there saying, well, it's not really my or DHS's responsibility to make sure illegals don't vote. My responsibility is the border. Well, he's doing a bang-up job on that, ain't he? So many blue areas are getting illegals driver's licenses so that they can vote. They're getting them all kinds of documentation so that they can vote. And again, conflicting reporting on this RCM flyer. We don't know if it's true, not true, or who originated it. But the bigger point is that NGOs like this one are bringing millions of illegals into the country and placing them in cities and states and telling them how to vote. So now the Democrats' Get Out the Vote operation is international, multi-country. Remember, illegals can vote in local elections in places like Los Angeles and San Francisco. So not much more is required. It's not a big leap to get them voting statewide and in federal elections. Also remember that in 2020, Trump, quote unquote, lost Arizona by just 10,000 votes. So if they can flood Arizona with, say, 200,000 illegals, they can get a percentage needed of illegals to vote for Biden, and it's over. Guys, you are seeing the rigging of the 2024 election right before your eyes. And where are the Republicans? The new RNC leadership is on it, but state by state, where are these state GOP organizations? I don't know. I really don't. A lot of Republicans keep funding this, not taking action on the border while continuing to shovel money to other nations' borders like Ukraine. These bills are all coming up this week. Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan. And a lot of Republicans are just shrugging about this. This nonchalance about this kind of thing is what got us the 2020 result. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, you know, he is one of the few red state AGs on top of this kind of stuff, which is why the Uni Party, the regime, wanted to get him, and they tried to impeach him. It failed, thank God. But he's one of very, very few actually on top of this stuff. Ken Paxton should open a criminal investigation into this and to the other NGOs working to get all of these millions of illegals across the border into the country and voting. We got to stop this at the source. It is now long past time that red state governors and state AGs begin to mirror what the left is doing. Nobody is saying act out violently. Nobody is saying break the law. But we have to start using the tools at our disposal to push back in the kinds of ways that the left is pushing to destroy this country. If we're going to have any hope of saving it, we've got to do it. And so in this case, with the illegals voting, we got to stop it at the source. And these red state AGs and governors have to get on top of this like yesterday. The left might be in a panic, but they're always at their best when they're at a panic. And by best, I mean coming up with new and creative ways to destroy the Constitution, the law, act in criminal ways out of desperation. I mean, we saw 2020. Virus, shut down the global economy, Antifa and Black Lives Matter destroying the country, rigging that election, January 6th. We see what they are capable of doing when they are desperate. So these are very, very dangerous times, guys. Very dangerous. We got to be on guard. We got to fight back with every tool at our disposal. All right, let's hit a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Congressman Andy Ogles out of Tennessee about what in Sam Hill is going on Capitol Hill, especially with Speaker Johnson. What is up with that? We're going to ask him about that, the budget fights, the border. And oh, he is moving to do one thing that you're really going to want to hear. That's coming up next. Sit tight. Okay, guys, listen up. There is a very common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there are a couple of reasons. First, sky-high persistent inflation. The cost of most things, as we all know, continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Did you know that since January of 2021, when Biden took office, the cost of living is up nearly 18%. Second, the national debt continues to skyrocket. It's now well above $34 trillion, causing all of us to worry when the whole house of cards will come crashing down. And this is a presidential election year that will have massive implications for the future of our country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? What are you waiting for? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Just text Monica to 989-898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. You can't beat that. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold, too. I know Philip Patrick and the great people over at Birch Gold Group. They're really smart and good people who will take excellent care of you. Just text Monica to 989-898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today. Well, I am so happy to have back with us today Congressman Andy Ogles. He is a Republican representing Tennessee's 5th Congressional District. He's joined the show before, and I'm so happy he's back. You can find him on X at Rep. Ogles, O-G-L-E-S. He is one of the good guys. And like I said, I'm delighted he's here. Welcome back.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always a treat. And, you know, your listeners don't know how lucky they are to have you, a true voice of conservative, out there fighting for us all.
Well, that's very kind of you, Congressman. I appreciate the kind words very much. And right back at you, I mean, the people of Tennessee's 5th Congressional District are very lucky indeed. I think they know that. But I think I speak for my entire audience when I say I wish we could clone you and have you be all of our representatives. If you could represent everybody, that would be great.
Well, we have a farm, and I would love to clone myself because I'm always behind on chores. I've got fencing to do, and, you know, and to that point, you know, we're supposed to be going home today, being back home in the district so we can do our town halls and be with constituents, and instead, we're going to be up here through Saturday night, which is absolutely absurd. The calendar is published almost a year in advance. There's no reason to be running behind schedule, but here we are.
You know, first of all, pray for me because my congressional representative is Jerry Nadler. So maybe I need to move. Maybe I need to move to your district, Congressman, so you can represent me. You know, what you just described is like the perennial source of frustration. I mean, so many sources of frustration when the average American looks at Capitol Hill and looks at the House and the Senate and all of the grave dysfunction. But what you're describing is like the endless Groundhog Day where Congress waits until the last minute. Usually it's midnight before some funding deadline or something, or over the weekend, as you say, and it's always hair on fire. And everybody's like, you know what? If I went to my job and didn't plan ahead or didn't plan ahead for my family for the week, getting my kids off to school or to camp or whatever, or budgeting for the groceries for the week, which all my money is now being eaten up by groceries because of Biden inflation. If the average American operated like Congress, they'd be fired. They'd lose their home. They'd lose their family. We're just looking at perhaps the gravest dysfunction we've ever seen.
Yeah. And, you know, and typically the reason why you'll see these types of shenanigans is what I'll call them is because, you know, leadership or who's ever in charge is trying to force through bad policy. And so they're stalling for time. They're creating that hair on fire, sense of urgency, emergency situation. So people will just vote for it and be done. But in this situation, and so your audience understands, you know, we come to the House floor and we vote on a bill. But before you do that, you vote on a quote unquote rule. So think about it. It's a, you know, if you were playing Monopoly, everybody that's going to play the game is going to agree to the terms of the game. Like, you know what you're voting on, you know why you're voting on it, how you're voting on it, et cetera, et cetera. And so before this piece of legislation, this monstrosity of a funding bill that sends money to border security for Ukraine, their border police, but not our own. It's sending money to Israel, but it's also sending money to Gaza. So we'll now be on both sides of the war. And you're going to send $9 billion to Gaza. You think that's actually not going to fall into the hands of Hamas? So it's just bad policy. So in rules, they're going to have to use Democrat votes to get the rule set and bring it to the House floor. But what you have to understand, the significance of that, since we've been keeping records since like 1995, the Speaker of the House has never used the minority party votes to steamroll his own party. So Mike Johnson is going to have to use Democrats to push through literally Biden's bill. I mean, so Joe Biden himself has come out and endorsed this bill that Mike Johnson is putting forward. I mean, that right there should tell you that there's something wrong with it. I mean, the guy gets lost in the Rose Garden. He doesn't have good judgment. We know he's sold out our country. And so if he's for it, every Republican should be against it.
And I want to deal with Speaker Johnson here in just a moment, but let's kind of burrow down into the spending issue. Congress has approved, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what, mid-April, so far this year, not fiscal year, this year, January through today, Congress has approved, I think, $1.2 trillion in spending. Is that correct?
Well, if not a little more. And so, again, you know, the spending levels under Mike Johnson are greater than at any time under Nancy Pelosi. So, again, that tells you how far he has taken us off really what is our Republican platform. And look, Mike's a friend of mine. He's a nice guy. But when you look at his play calls and you armchair quarterback, he's literally made every call the wrong way. I mean, in essence, if, you know, and I distill this down, you know, if there's three choices, one of them is, you know, number three is the bad choice. It seems like every time he makes a play call, it's number three. It's the bad choice. It's the wrong choice for America, and why there's such a dysfunction and angst up here right now in D.C.
It is true, like you said, $1.2 trillion in spending just in the first 4.5 months of this year. Let's talk about these spending bills. So, you know, at the very least, Speaker Johnson has divided them up. He's got the Ukraine bill, he's got the Israel bill, he's got a Taiwan bill, he's got, I guess, a TikTok bill, and then some performative border security bill. So all of these bills adding up to, I guess, over $100 billion for foreign countries to help enforce their borders, but nothing to help enforce ours. Where's the logic in that?
Exactly. And if you go back since he's been speaker, you know, and I think Don Jr. just put out a video where it's, you know, it's snippets of Mike's own words, like nothing happens until border. Border is the priority. Our country comes first. Border, border, border. And yet here we are. And the other thing you're going to hear about this legislation, that is there's a loan provision for Ukraine. But I'm going to tell you a dirty little secret, that half of the loan can be forgiven after November. Mm-hmm. And then the other half can be forgiven in 2026. So, by the way, that's not actually a loan. That's a gimmick to try to steamroll the American people who may not be paying as close attention as some others. But it's not a loan. And again, so he's going back on his word of, OK, if we're going to do this, let's make it in such a fashion where there's accountability. So quite frankly, and the reason why you might want a loan that at some point you might want to forgive, you know, 10, 20 years from now, is that you have leverage, that you make sure they're doing the right things, that they're putting in reforms to make sure that it's a democratic country, that they're no longer. I mean, before the war started, Ukraine was literally one of the most corrupt countries in the world. And so we're just going to give them money hand over fist like we've been doing. Look, I understand it's a complicated situation there between with Russia and Ukraine. But when you look at what's going on and what's in our best interest, I'm not certain. In fact, I know we should be focusing on our border. More Americans will die this month because of fentanyl that came over the southern border than Ukrainians will die. And that is a fact.
It is absolutely mind-blowing, and I want to get to a bigger question about all this here in a second. But the Senate under Schumer, first of all, they killed the Mayorkas impeachment articles yesterday in clear violation of the instructions and demands of the U.S. Constitution. That's out the window. But also, Schumer is demanding that these foreign aid packages are all compiled into one bill. So let's say the Ukraine bill goes down, or let's say, just for the sake of argument, Ukraine bill goes down in the House. Then what happens in the Senate? Can the Senate demand that all three or four bills do get compiled into one and sent over there? Can the Senate compile it into one and vote on that package and then have to send it back to the House? How does it go?
Well, so to be honest with you, the only opportunity to stop, you know, we as conservative Republicans or the American people getting steamrolled is to kill the rule. And so when they bring that first procedural vote up on the floor, we have to kill it then, because once if the rule passes, then Democrats are going to vote to pass this, you know, spending boondoggle through, because it's basically the Schumer bill. It's basically the Biden, the White House bill that they've been broken into pieces. And so then the Senate can take that, cobble it back together, and then, you know, ultimately it'll get signed by the president. So your only chance to stop it is through the rule process. And so that's what, quite frankly, we're working on now to see if we can get enough votes. More typically, the Democrats won't vote for a quote Republican rule. It's kind of, it's always very partisan, but we know some are going to cross over. So the question is can you get more Republicans to vote no and kill it than Democrats that are going to try to save it? That's going to be the problem there, because it is literally everything the Democrats want. It's money for Gaza. It's money for Ukraine. It's money, 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 which, again, like you said, $1.2 trillion. We're barreling towards $36 trillion in debt. We've got to stop the spending train. And the only way to do this is to fight, fight, fight.
Well, I know you are a strong fiscal conservative, and we appreciate that very much. But, you know, the Republicans do control the House. I know it's by only one vote, but the Republicans have control over the House. When Democrats have power, they exercise raw power. When Republicans have power, they just go along with whatever the Democrats want. Why is that?
Well, I mean, to your point, I mean, basically what you see coming to the House floor is not what we've discussed in the Republican side of the aisle or the Republican conference in the House of Representatives. It's where Mike Johnson went to the Senate, went to Schumer and said, hey, what will you guys pass? He's gone to the White House and said, hey, what will you sign? So instead of representing our interests and what we should be fighting for, fighting for the American people, he's gone to the other side and say, hey, what will you give me permission to do so that I can send it over to you? Well, if that's where you're starting your negotiation, you've lost. You have no leverage. And so that's why this is such a, you know, garbage piece of legislation. That's why it spends so much money. That's why it does not put America first, because the Democrat Party doesn't believe in America first. Right. This is the same party that is persecuting Donald Trump. This is the same party that's going to persecute you, persecute me, persecute, an average conservative if they have the opportunity. And kind of on that point, when you look at FISA, the surveillance bill that just passed, you know, we know that's been weaponized against the American people. But again, this leadership crammed it through, sent it over to the Senate because that's what the Senate wanted.
You know, speaking of the open border and Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of DHS, the House, including you, voted for these articles of impeachment on his dereliction of duty, lying before Congress about it, etc. Sent those articles, as the Constitution requires, over to the Senate. Chuck Schumer and every single Democrat in the Senate kills the whole thing. How does that make you feel when all of your hard work, whether it's holding these criminals accountable, whether it's trying to work toward fiscal restraint, whether it's trying to do whatever you can on the open border, how does that make you feel? Are you incredibly frustrated? Because it's frustrating for us to watch people like you and your colleagues like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and so many others who are working so hard to try to rein in the excesses and criminal abuses of this administration and the Democrats, only to see it go die because there aren't enough Republicans standing up to fight and the Democrats just end up doing whatever they want anyway.
Well, you know, to your earlier point, you know, when the Democrats are in control, they exercise raw power.
Right.
They wield it ruthlessly.
Right.
Republicans, for whatever reason, we failed to do that at times. And so what you saw when Nancy Pelosi was in charge, the impeachment of Trump, the impeachment of Trump, the impeachment of Trump, they did not necessarily have proper grounds to do so. And so, you know, we're in a precarious place in history, I would argue, when you have this procedural process where you can impeach a cabinet secretary or the president of the United States. And it's being done not because it's in the cause or name of justice, but because it's, you know, motivated by political retribution. And so what you have is we have a constitutional obligation that if we believe there's high crimes and misdemeanors, we have to impeach Joe Biden. We have an obligation to do that, send it over to the Senate, and they conduct a trial. And even if doing the impeachment is the timing's off because of an election. There's no asterisk there. There's no semicolon. It says, well, you have a constitutional obligation unless it's somehow inconvenient for you, unless somehow it's not politically expedient. You have an obligation to do it. So to your point, the Senate had an obligation to have a trial and to hear our articles, and they failed to do so. And again, this underscores how the impeachment process was weaponized against Trump, and how they've obfuscated this process and totally dismissed it because they're going to do it to protect their own. We're in a dangerous place, and it goes back to this weaponization of the Justice Department, the weaponization of the government against the American people. And that's not political rhetoric. That is simple fact.
Well, you know, speaking of the GOP leadership, the House leadership, and Speaker Johnson, there is increasing frustration in your ranks about his so-called leadership. It is amazing to so many of us who really didn't know Mike Johnson, but then when his name was put forward for Speaker and we started looking at his record, we thought, huh, okay, here's a good man. He is a godly man. He believes in fiscal responsibility, individual liberty, getting America back to its foundational principles. And then he gets in there and the deep state gets to him and they start doing these briefings and he starts going down the road with the Democrats and the deep state on FISA and big spending in Ukraine and everything else. Your colleagues, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tom Massey, are frustrated enough with his support for the Democrat agenda, everything you've just laid out, that they're going with a motion to vacate. Where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, that'll be interesting to see. So there's two ways that a motion to vacate can be put forward. One is through kind of the traditional process where we go through a committee type situation. The other one is by way of privilege motion. And that's where it goes straight to the House floor. And then the author of that privilege motion can trigger. So it's the nuclear option. She didn't exercise that nuclear option. So that her current articles are really kind of a warning to Mike to say, hey, look, let's get back to the basics. Let's get back to who Mike Johnson was before he became Speaker of the House. So, you know, you look at FISA, you know, he was on judiciary. He's a constitutional attorney. He gave eloquent speeches as to why FISA was bad, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which was just reauthorized, by the way, and how it violated the Fourth Amendment, how it has been weaponized against the American people. There's been almost 3 million queries of Americans. So the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is supposed to be used to surveil like the 9/11 participants, you know, people who are foreign nationals, but instead it's also being used against Americans. We had situations where people were queried because they were Republican, because they were Christian, or because they were Catholic. You had situations where people were spying on their girlfriends. So the loopholes in FISA are so large, you could drive trucks through it. And we were trying to say, look, if you're going to spy on an American person, we have a Fourth Amendment, you need to get a warrant. And the Speaker has always held that position before he became Speaker. Suddenly, he's Speaker of the House, and he throws out his constitutional arguments. He crams FISA down the throats of the American people so that your government can continue to spy on you. So I'm not convinced that the motion to vacate will actually occur. We'll be gaveling out sometime on Saturday, I do believe. And so we'll see what happens. But at the end of the day, I don't think the votes would be there to oust Mike Johnson, because I do truly believe the Democrats will save him, because he has passed and put forward almost everything that they've asked him to do.
Right. I mean, it's the Democrats' agenda. And at their spending level.
Literally.
So, you know, all of the tremendous frustration out here among the people is, what is the point of electing Republicans to control the House if they just behave like Democrats? What is the solution? I mean, you know, I know you don't want to speculate about Speaker Johnson, but how does this happen? I mean, people out here are like, we vote and vote and vote and nothing changes. So are these people that we're electing, apart from you, present company excluded, but are they weak? Do they want to be liked by the New York Times? Are they compromised? Does the deep state hold a metaphorical gun to their head and say, well, that's nice that you think you're going to represent your district, but now you work for us. And if you don't, we're going to destroy you. I mean, how does this operate where we've got this uniparty regime that even though the face has changed, the policies stay the same and the policies are leading us to destruction?
And they are. But, you know, the deep state's real. It has its tentacles all over the Capitol and in offices, et cetera. You have foreign governments that have, undue influence up here. But, you know, you've got a group of loyal patriots who are willing to stand here and fight. We take the arrows. We take the hits. And I always go back to our founding fathers, two examples. One, John Quincy Adams, he loved the House of Representatives because it's where you argued, you debated, you fought, you did the people's work. And we've got to restore that type of culture, is that we're going to hash this out. And it may get heated, but at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is restore the Constitution, restore states' rights, and protect the American people. But then I want to go back to this idea of giving up. Our founding fathers were taking on an empire. They were outgunned. They were outmanned. They are outfunded. They didn't have the resources. They didn't have the numbers, but they never gave up hope. They kept fighting. They kept believing, and they kept praying. And as long as you have a group of individuals in the House of Representatives that are willing to do that, then America should never give up hope. Donald Trump's going to be your next president. We're going to win the Senate. And if I have anything to do with it, we're going to win the House of Representatives back. And I do believe if Trump gets in there, you're going to see a transformative moment in American history where we start to correct course. Look, the United States government, our economy, it's a big ship. It turns slowly. But if we can set new coordinates today, we can save America for the future.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, that's for sure. And all of us have to work around the clock in order to make that happen. Before we let you go, speaking of President Trump, you have a bill to rename Washington's big international airport, Dulles Airport. For whom exactly?
Yeah, well, Donald Trump, you know, I think let's put his flag in the ground. And of course, then the Democrats kind of tongue in cheek responded with they were going to name a prison after Donald Trump. And I'll say this. Donald Trump was the president of law and order. He was the president who secured our border. So you can name streets, prisons, airports, anything federal, we should name after Donald Trump to send a message to the American people and remind the American people that their life was better when Donald Trump was president. We were safer as a country, whether it was by our foreign adversaries or at our southern border. Your economy was better under Donald Trump. Your dollar went further under Donald Trump, and your children's future was better under Donald Trump. And the American people better not forget that come November, because we have a chance to take this country back, but it all starts with Donald Trump winning the White House.
Mm-hmm. Are you getting a lot of support in the House for this?
You know, we are. Now, whether or not it'll actually make it out of the House, we'll see. But of course, we know what's going to happen in the Senate. They won't take it up. They'll vote against it. Most likely, they'll just ignore it.
I want everybody in the audience to pay really close attention to this, because while on the surface, it seems like it's a fun thing, like, oh, let's rename Dulles Airport the Donald J. Trump International Airport. And I absolutely want to see this happen. But a lot of people would say, well, in the scheme of things, I want everybody to understand how important this is. The left, for decades, about 100 years, the left has been great at controlling the culture precisely for this reason. They name things for leftist icons like JFK or Martin Luther King Jr. or the Dulles brothers, who were like the original deep state guys. The entire airport is named for the deep state, Dulles International Airport, okay? And we have always thought it was like a small thing, so we never really matched it. The Reagan National Airport in D.C., the other airport, that was a big deal. This is a big deal, and we need to get with the program. So good for you for going down this road, and I hope it sees the light of day, and I hope we can make it happen, because culturally we need to be infiltrating in this kind of way with our icons to balance all of the messaging coming from the other side.
Well, that's right. And, you know, they don't think twice about ripping down historical figures across college campuses, right, or on public squares. I mean, we've seen this over the last 5-10 years where they're trying to erase American history. Because, look, you know, the only way you're going to know where you're going, your destination, is to know that point from which you came. And we can't forget the good things that we've done as a country, the mistakes we've made as a country. Look, you and I, we are the sum total of our life experiences, the good stuff and the bad stuff. And the country, that is the same as well. And so this idea that the Democrats are going to change, rewrite history is a dangerous place. And again, it's a direct assault against the Constitution of the United States, and is why, you know, and we could talk ad nauseum about this, why the Department of Education needs to be done away with, and we need to get that back to the states where we're actually teaching civics, math, reading, writing, arithmetic, etc., because our kids aren't learning, and that's intentional. Look at Rules for Radical Saul Alinsky. If you can capture the minds of a youthful generation, right, or the youth, you change the culture forever.
And that's it. So we are looking forward to your efforts on this, renaming the Deep State Dulles Airport for Donald J. Trump. Congressman Andy Ogles, Republican of Tennessee's 5th Congressional District. Find him on X at Rep Ogles and support him however you can. He's truly one of the good guys. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, and God bless.
Okay, guys, that is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me on this very important show and for checking out our great sponsors. We all really appreciate that. Have a great end to your week, a fantastic weekend, and I will see you right back here with more huge shows coming up next week. This episode of the Monica Crowley Podcast was produced by Behakel Entertainment, LLC.